This is Toledo Symphony Lab, a behind-the-scenes look at the world of classical music from WGTE Public Media and your Toledo Symphony. I'm Brad Cresswell. Joining me in the studio today are the Toledo Symphony's president and CEO, Zach Vassar, also TSO Marketing Director, Vanessa Gardner. On the phone, we have Principal Second Violin and Artistic Administrator, Merwin Sue, and we also have on the phone a very special, special guest. Wait for it. Whoops, that's the wrong one. Let's try that. There we go. Please welcome Daniel Barenboim. No.
Really? It is wonderful to be here. Really. I have so much fun here in Toledo every time I come. It is fabulous. Huh?
That's better than I could have possibly hoped for. We're actually talking with William Eddins. Conductor and pianist William Eddins, or Bill Eddins, we're going to call you Bill, making a return appearance.
That's here. Not Barenboim?
That's not Barenboim. Okay. Well, we've lost Zach. We're off to a good start. And I mean that in the best way possible.
Wait, what does that say about me?
Yeah. For those of you who may remember when William Eddins came to Toledo last time around, we had him on the podcast by phone, and it was a raucous time. So
it's one of my favorite interviews ever.
Yeah,
yeah. And I say that about everyone. Don't worry, Bill.
It came up, Bill, that you do such a great Daniel Barenboim. I couldn't help but start off with an inside joke. I mean, you know, what better way to alienate our listening audience than to start off with something they have no idea what we're talking about?
That's basically how we do the show every week.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
True to form.
So, yeah, Bill.
It's Monty Python, except in Ohio.
Yes. So, Bill, you are coming to the Toledo area to conduct this wonderful concert.
He's also coming to Toledo. I mean, it's yeah, not like coming he's out to in the Toledo. Suburbs.
Yeah. Well, he has to pass through the area to get to actual Toledo, so.
It's a good point, really.
This concert is going to be a streaming concert. It's virtual only, but you're conducting it. Pianist Stuart Goodyear is going to be here again. He's right. Doing Beethoven Piano Concerto Number 4, if you didn't know. And... you still have time to prepare. Still have time to prepare. We have a couple of other works on there, also one by Stanley Cowell and one by Coleridge Taylor Perkinson. And I'll ask you about those a little bit later. But first of all, this concert is happening on Saturday at 8 p.m. It's virtual only. You can find information at stream.artstoledo.com or go to the website proper at toledosymphony.com. And you can also call them up on the phone number, 419-248. What is it?
Oh, you're so awful at this.
I forget the number every time.
419-246-8000.
419-246-8000. We need a jingle to go with that, right?
Like the Empire flooring?
Exactly.
419-286-8000.
Yay.
Hey, okay. Hey.
Oh, Lord.
So, now, let's see if we can get back on track here. Now,
we were never on it, so.
Now, Bill, let's see if we can get on track.
There we go.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
All right, Bill. Now, everybody here knows you except for Vanessa. Vanessa has not met you before. And I'm willing to bet that some of the listeners to the podcast are not that familiar with you. So what we are going to do is have Bill tell Bill's story. And I don't I want you to go back to when you were around 5 years old and you got that first piano. Does that make sense? That was you, right? I got a little music for you. Hang on.
That was me, Sonny, back in the day. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Okay.
Good line.
There's your mood music.
Suddenly I'm getting musical PTSD here. Yeah.
Don't worry. Whenever Brad starts playing beautiful music, it usually comes out with some sort of ridiculous drum track, and it turns into like a disco version of Beethoven. It'll be fine.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. Take it back to 5 years old. How'd you get your first piano?
Well, my parents bought it at a garage sale. I mean, how else do you get pianos these days?
It's a Cracker Jacks.
Right. It turns out that it is actually a very unique instrument. It's It was a Wurlitzer 7-foot grand made out of mahogany and cast iron steel. And it, there is no lid for the piano because the harp where the strings are is raised and exposed. So if you're looking at it sideways, straight on, you can see this kind of above the piano. And there's no fallboard for the keys either. It turns out that it was one of a very special run that Wurlitzer made in the early 30s in an Art Deco style. And the rumor is that this particular one was made for the last concert tour of the great American operetta composer Sigmund Romberg.
Oh, wow.
And I still own this piano. The weird thing about it is for years, for decades, we thought it was the only one of its kind left in the world. Because they made just a very, very few of these, and the information to try and find where they are has totally been lost in the stratosphere. And about 15 years ago, I was doing a tour over here at the Schubert Club, which is over here is in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And the St. Paul Schubert Club is one of the oldest performance, how would one put it, clubs, traditions in the United States. They get international artists and this and that and the other, and they have multiple venues. And they also have a fabulous keyboard museum, some great pianos and such. And I was taking a tour, and I came around the corner, and I saw the exact same piano as the one I own. And the funny thing is, Schubert Club was convinced that they had the only one left in the world,
right,
as well. And we were convinced of it. And the funny thing is that these two pianos are now living within 4 miles of each other.
That's amazing.
And wow, as far as we know, they're the only two left.
That's fantastic. What a great story.
Yay!
Did they get theirs at a garage sale too?
Probably. Yeah.
I want to know about the Schubert Club. What is the dress code when you walk into the Schubert Club?
Yeah. You have to have a powdered wig and
high collar.
High collar. It was a punctured cape, and then a monocle, I think, is required for all gentlemen. Yes,
obviously.
Ladies have a hoop skirt for the ladies.
It's not the Colonel Clink Club. It's the Franz Schubert Club.
Do you have to sing like a few bars of Lieder to get in, or like what's the passcode? I wonder.
Yeah, Fidelio.
D for Ellen.
Right.
Which funny enough is the music that my washers for clothes uses to say that it's the end of the cycle.
Did you get it at a garage sale though?
I know, and I could not make this up either. But every once in a while, you're walking through the house, you're da, 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 dee, da, 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 is, oh, the clothes are ready. Da, da, da.
So you have to skip and hop over to the dryer.
Somebody at Whirlpool has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
Or was a failed musician.
Or they just looked for something that they didn't have to pay royalties on. Right?
There you go.
Nobody's going to recognize this one, boys.
Yeah, totally. So, Bill, let me ask you. So, you started as a pianist, obviously. Yeah,
I continue as a pianist.
You continue as a pianist. When did you venture out into conducting, or as we clarified last time, play conducting? Play conducting, yeah. Meaning that you're playing the piano and conducting, not like
then
doing
the.
Here. Yeah.
Well, I got the bug at Eastman in college because I got to Eastman and I got roped into playing in the orchestras. And when you're a young pianist, you never play in an orchestra, man. I mean, you know, you're always practicing your Chopin etudes and your Beethoven sonatas because, you know, of course, being a pianist, you are by definition the center of the known universe. So you get to college and suddenly there are other instruments and you go, oh, what do those things
Yeah, had
do?
You ever been surrounded by that many people before?
No. Seriously? Only in my mind. And they were clapping uproariously to, you know, whatever it is that I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there they are.
The Eastman, there you go.
I got the Eastman, and they roped me into playing in the orchestra. And let me tell you, there's some great orchestral piano parts and orchestral keyboard parts. And I had so much fun. I said, wow, I got to get me some more of this. And you know what? I'd love to play some Brahms. Now, the only problem being is that there are no orchestral piano parts in the repertoire of Johannes Brahms. So I had a choice. I could either, you know, get up in front of an orchestra, wave my arms around, or I could learn the violin or something so I could play in an orchestra. And, you know, frankly, I got enough problems playing the instrument I'm supposed to be able to play. So I went, okay, you know, screw that. I'm going to get up and wave my arms around and see what happens. That's literally exactly what happened. That's how I got my start.
Well, I think that's pretty much what every conductor does. They just get up and wave their arms around and see what happens, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You make it sound like how hard can it be? I mean, you must have had some sense of the techniques required, having performed under several conductors at that point.
Nope.
Nice try, Zach. Zach is warming up for the quiz.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Yeah.
Is the quiz going to be named that washing machine?
Yes, it is.
That would be outstanding.
Things found at a garage sale. Right. Vanessa, where'd you get your horn? Did that come from a garage sale? Oh. Vanessa is a French horn player also.
No.
We all ever crossed the bear, you know.
But funny, no. She got into it because of Brahms, right?
No. Mm-hmm. My first horn came from the Canadian Brass.
Really? From the Canadian Brass? Yeah.
Did they know you took it?
Yes.
Yes. They had a garage sale. Yeah. The rest is history.
Concert ticket, $45. New shoes, $100. Stolen horn, priceless.
That's right. Yeah. No, I paid every penny.
Yeah. Nice. So, Bill, I'm sorry. Where were we?
No.
You were talking about becoming a conductor.
Yeah, and I had to respond, nope. Question, but because it's true. You get up and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. But I'll just go like this. And you have, you know, especially when you're a young conductor, you really have no clue what you're doing. I mean, now that I'm an older conductor, I at least know that I have no clue. But when you're younger, you don't even know that. So, you know, you just get up there and you're flailing away and people are trying to follow you. That's when orchestral musicians learn the great tradition of just keeping your head down and looking at the music and not looking at the conductor, which is the smartest way of getting through any career.
Yeah. But Vanessa's nodding her head while you're saying that. I don't know if Merwin is. Merwin is off somewhere.
I think it's really important. We preserve the mystique at all times on this show.
That's right.
There's a mystique.
There is now. Some people think it's garlic. It's really just a little mystique in the air.
Yeah, there you go.
So I do have to ask, all kidding aside, though, I mean, now that you've been the guy with his head down trying not to look at the conductor and you are now the person who's on the podium, does eye contact or the lack of eye contact bother you?
Oh, yes. Oh, tremendously. On top of everything else, I've got these huge eyes. So, you know, it's kind of hard to ignore it when I'm staring at you with these big globs that I got from my dad. Thank you, Dad, and genetics. The thing that I do, actually, is I play chamber music. That's what I say that I like to do the most. And when you have that kind of contact, you know, in a small group, in a trio, or a quartet, or whatever, it's very intense, you know, and you kind of go into this little world, and you're always communicating through the eyes and through the music, whatever. If I'm on a podium and you know, I don't see anybody looking at me, I know something is desperately wrong. Either I am really screwing up, or they're really screwing up, or something in between, or some combination thereof. But there has to be that kind of connection in order to make music, as far as I'm concerned, because we, you know, yeah, we're doing something which is aural, A-U-R-A-L, but there we are visually wired human beings.
Absolutely.
And you,
You got to be able to look and see and connect through the eyes.
Well, I'm going to jump in here because I know that you've recently done a concert with Minnesota. How has that kind of feedback changed when so many of the musicians are masked?
Funny enough, I think it's even more critical for us to be looking around because, you know, now everything has been narrowed down to just the eyes, right? We pick up so many cues from the position of the mouth and, you know, whether people are smiling or grumbly or, you know, whatever, and the rest of the face, just, you know, however many muscles there are. I mean, something ridiculous, like 40 different muscles to smile or something like that. I don't even know. But
I don't even remember.
One muscle to smile.
One muscle
it's
to smile?
It's the zygomatic muscle.
Ooh. Or not.
Yes. Now we've turned into an anatomy podcast.
It is my favorite piece of trivia, and let me tell you, it kills at cocktail parties.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Well, it's a good thing that you have those large, expressive eyes, Bill, that the symphony can follow when you're giving cues like that. I want to jump over to our quiz real quickly and then come back and talk about the concert and talk a little bit about Stuart Goodyear as well. Mm-hmm. But last time you were on, Bill, you joined us, I think, midway through the podcast, and for some reason we were talking about craft beer, and you shared that you're a home brewer sometimes. And we have Beethoven on this concert. So what I've done is I put together a beer and Beethoven quiz. Okay.
I have a chance. I have a chance.
There's just a few questions here. Let me bring up a little music. Now, this is a Beethoven minuet that sounds a little bit like a Munich beer hall. So I thought it would work.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that Beethoven debuted in 1770. When did beer in a can debut? Was it 1733, 1833, or 1933?
Ooh.
1933.
Yeah, I was 1933.
I'm trying to figure out if the can technology would have existed in the 1800s.
I would like the record to stand that there's no way anybody but me got that question right.
It was in Newark, New Jersey.
You have some PTSD from Michael Lang. Yeah.
Some quiz PTSD.
Okay.
So I actually knew that for a reason, which we will get into after the quiz.
The first beer was brewed in Egypt. Where did Beethoven give his first performance in front of other people? Was it in Vienna? Was it in Bonn? Or was it in Cologne?
Bonn.
No, this is not his actual... I mean, that would make sense since that's his hometown, but...
I'm going to say Cologne.
Yay!
Yeah,
really?
I may have made that up, but I found it somewhere that he was 7 years old.
Well, once we cite our sources.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be... Because what Wikipedia forgot to tell you is that he simply was wearing cologne and he was playing in Bonn. Yeah. But okay, we're both winning.
All right, let's move on. Beethoven's teachers in Vienna were Haydn and Albrechtsberger. Which two states did not legalize home brewing until 2013? Which two states did not legalize home brewing until 2013? Is it Mississippi and Alabama? Is it Tennessee and Georgia? Or is it Colorado and Utah? Just take a guess.
I'm gonna go with Colorado and
Utah. That's where I would go to.
No.
Mississippi and Alabama.
Yay! All right, Merwin gets that one.
How did you know that one, Merwin?
Oh, I would have guessed Hawaii and Alaska because of Haydn and Albrechtsberger, but that's why I would.
Wow! If only I had your genius, I would have thought of that. Okay.
See how far it got him.
North Dakota residents drink more beer per person than any other state. That is 43 gallons a year per person. I don't know if that includes kids, but according to a global sleep study, which piece of Beethoven's music was most successful at putting people to sleep? Was it the Pathetique, the Billy Joel movement from the Pathetique Sonata, first movement from the Moonlight Sonata, or the Adagio, second movement from the Waldstein Sonata? Which one of those
put the most people to sleep? This is Waldstein.
I'm going to go with Waldstein.
Oh! No Waldstein.
Okay, so Vanessa, do you want to flip a coin on this one?
I mean, I think it's Moonlight, but it's probably not because it's too obvious.
Moonlight! Well, wait, do I have to take it back? Nope. You said it's probably not?
Nope.
I thought it was too easy because that was the Bill's story music. You were just setting us up to think about recency effect, and of course...
My watch just popped up with an alert to keep crushing it.
I like how your watch thinks that you're in the middle of a workout.
Right. My heart rate goes very high in these quizzes, all right?
Okay.
Close my move ring.
Vanessa's heart rate goes very high in these quizzes. Which state outlawed...
Okay. Beethoven started to go deaf in his late 20s. When was the first non-alcoholic beer brewed? Was it 1919 with Prohibition? Was it 1929 with the Great Depression? Or was it 1939 with World War II?
I'm going to go 29.
39.
I'm
going to
go 39.
I'm going to go 19 on Prohibition.
Yay! Yes. 1919, the first non-alcoholic beer because of Prohibition. The good news is I've only got one left. Okay.
Good.
The most popular beer in America is Heineken, followed by Corona and Guinness. So what was Beethoven's favorite beverage?
Red wine.
Was it? I didn't even get to say.
Nope, that's incorrect. It was fortified wine. Ooh.
Fortified with redness.
I think Bill and I are going to have a throwdown.
Well, no, that's fine. I'll give that one to Bill. But Vanessa, you're still ahead by one. So the winner of the quiz is Vanessa.
Yay. Wow.
Hey, look, I just closed a ring.
Unfortunately, it was your stand ring. That doesn't seem to count.
Very nice. Well, Bill, thanks for playing. Luck next time.
Yeah. No worries.
Let's hope your counselor is more successful than your quiz performance.
Seriously.
Wow, this coming from the president and CEO. Way to instill confidence, Zach. That's okay. Let's talk about that concert a little bit. This is with pianist Stuart Goodyear, so you're not play conducting this one, Bill.
He's just conducting.
Yeah. Could you imagine how awkward that would be?
Stuart has been here before. Have you worked with Stuart before, Bill?
Yeah, I've known Stuart for a goodly number of years. Worked with him a couple times for sure, yeah.
Is that two fortnights? Is that goodly equals one goodly is two fortnights?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a not short of a hectare.
This is going on for long.
I'm curious though, what is it like for you as a pianist, you know, to conduct somebody else playing a Beethoven piano concerto? Because you've done your fair share of Beethoven. I mean,
I've done 1, 2, and 3, but I don't play 4 and 5 because I got other things to worry about in life. So for me, I mean, the fourth piano concerto is like, man, you work that hard. That's fine. I will once again just wave my arms around and see if I can make the magic happen for you. But I think Stuart and I have done Beethoven. We might have done this particular one. I know he and I have played together. We did Mozart double and Mozart triple together. I was conducting. He was playing one of the parts. Yeah. I think we did Poulenc double as well, which was huge fun. It's just such a great piece of music. I'm looking forward to working with Stuart again. I haven't seen him in a few years or had a chance to work with him in a few years. So it's always great to, you know, to work with someone who you know, you've worked with before, you kind of know where the tendencies are going to be. You know how crazy they are. So that never comes as a shock. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm curious. Do you know those kids' books called Who Would Win? They have like different animals facing off. They have like a velociraptor against a, you know, pterodactyl or whatever.
Velociraptor.
Yep.
So if we had Who Will Win Classical Music edition, and we had the pianists, which one of you guys would win, you or Stuart?
Probably him. He probably practices a lot more than I do these days. I mean, I, when you're a conductor, you have to get into the score and do all this, you know, and that takes time. Plus, I'm trying to open a brewery, so that takes up a lot of time.
Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Barenboim returns.
Really?
Are you really opening up a brewery?
Yep, sure am.
Is it called Barenboim?
Oh, I see what you did there. Actually, no. It's called Metronome.
Ooh.
Metronome, like G-N-O-M-E?
No.
It's a very cosmopolitan gnome.
It's actually, funny enough, the gnome is our mascot, G-N-O-M-E, but it is without the G, the name. This started late last year with a buddy of mine. Metronome is a socially missioned brewery, and our goal is to nurture outstanding music education in the Twin Cities Metro. So all the proceeds for the sale of our beer will go to underwriting music lessons, music education, music instruments for underprivileged youth here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding area. And so we've been working on that for the last 4 or 5 months. We have our pilot brewery is going to be up and running in about a month, I would say. And we're hoping to be able to have our first beer available towards the end of this year.
That's fantastic.
That's what I've been working on. I mean,
so what you're saying is that the drinks are on you this Sunday, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. I can't wait till you expand to Ohio.
Yeah.
I'm working on it, man. Well, actually, I'm not. I'm hoping that...
Well, you are now.
Yeah.
I am now, right?
Oh, that's outstanding. Yeah. I love the idea of supporting music with the profits. That's amazing. Well done.
Well, we're just about out of time. I do want to give you guys the last word. If you have any final thoughts, you want to wrap things up for a second?
I hate for this to be the last word, but the Beethoven 4 has always fascinated me. And I just love to ask you, Bill, where do you go during the slow movement of this piano concerto? Because it is one of the most kind of hypnotic and creepy and beautiful at the same time. Where does your mind go when you're hearing this music?
Yeah, I've always said that the slow movement of the fourth is the moment where Beethoven just starts to trip out. I mean, you can just tell he is starting to reach for a different universe than what had been going on before during this time. For me, it's such a great conversation. Yeah. You have, you know, the orchestra is kind of like the Greek chorus, and the piano is the, you know, the hero that is trying to figure his, her, or its way through, I don't know, the storms of the Aegean Sea or whatever. But it is, oh, it's just such, it's a few minutes of just absolutely glorious music making. And it's for me, it's always a highlight in any given year when I know the fourth concerto is around. It's like, oh, what am I going to do with that second movement? It's because it is utterly profound.
That's wonderful. Do you want to say something, Bill, about the other two works on the program? We have Stanley Cowell's Fanfare and Fond Remembrance, which I don't know.
Right.
I love that title. And then the Sinfonietta by Collars Taylor Perkinson. Can you tell us about those?
Well, I understand that Mr. Cowell was a local gent, composer who was active in Western Ohio. So, you know, it's always fun to find these composers who kind of pop up out of nowhere, and you go, well, where have you been all my life? Let me explore your musical language. And, you know, this fanfare is obviously for brass. And I found it to be a very melodic, very lovely piece. And I'm really looking forward to bringing it to the performance. And, you know, the Perkinson, interestingly enough, I do not know much about this gentleman, but I do know I really like his musical language.
Yeah.
that much I can tell you.
if I do not know a composer, I will on occasion just dial up a video or a recording of a piece just to get an idea, an aural idea of what their musical language is. And I dialed up the third movement of this sinfonietta and went, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. I like this. I like how he's making harmonies and rhythms work contrarian wise, and he's got this groove going here. And once again, where has this guy been all my life? And you know, it's one of those pieces that makes you go, huh, I'm going to explore and see if I can find more of his music. So I'm really looking forward to doing this. Matter of fact, I've already programmed this piece again somewhere else for next season.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yay!
Well, one of the great things about Stanley is he really kind of took the legacy of another great Toledo pianist in Art Tatum. And so he really kind of immersed himself in that legacy. But it's really interesting in that we don't really hear that so much in this fanfare. He wrote this really for his hometown orchestra. And he actually wrote the remembrance part of it for his hometown piano teacher. So I think it's kind of got this really cool tie-in with some of the music education things we were just talking about, because he wrote this fanfare for his orchestra, but the remembrance for his piano teacher. And Stanley just passed away a couple months ago, and we just thought it would be great to bring this piece back a little bit to kind of, you know, send him on with good memories and that kind of thing. So
I want to mention the concert again is Saturday the 6th at 8 o'clock p.m., streaming online. It's virtual only. Pianist Stuart Goodyear with the 4th Piano Concerto of Ludwig van Beethoven, and the Sinfonietta No. 1 by Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, and Fanfare and Fond Remembrance by Stanley Cowell. All of it conducted by William Eddins, who has been our guest today. You can find more information at stream.artstoledo.com or toledosymphony.com. This program is a production of WGTE Public Media in collaboration with our sponsor, the Toledo Symphony, with generous support from the Rita Barber Kern Foundation. You can download episodes of our program as a podcast by going to our website at wgte.org/lab. You can also subscribe to us through your podcast app of choice, including Apple and Google Podcasts. Don't forget to check out all the upcoming events at the Symphony. You can visit their website, again, at toledosymphony.com, and their various social media outlets on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget that you can find those streaming concerts, all of them, online at stream.artstoledo.com. My thanks to Zach Vassar, Vanessa Gardner, Merwin Sue, and William Eddins. I'm Brad Cresswell. You've been listening to Toledo Symphony Lab from FM 91.